Hello and welcome back to the Security Hazard Podcast. You are joined once again by Jack and...
And it's Andrew as well. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you've had a nice week, couple of weeks, however long it's been since the last time you heard one of these.
Yes. So, how you doing, Andrew?
I'm pretty good, Jack. Pretty good. The weather has been pretty decent. Been outside, enjoying the sun, getting some barbecue. All very nice. And, of course, enjoying a weekly dose of Gerry Anderson information. What about yourself?
Very much the same way, really. We enjoyed 4th of July over here recently.
Lovely.
Lovely. So, I thought we'd focus on something a little bit different today. It's actually an article written by Andrew for the official Gerry Anderson website, of which I have contributed in the past, and Andrew currently contributes to quite a bit. And this is actually an interview. Perhaps, Andrew, you'd like to kind of talk through this a little bit.
Yeah, sure, no problem. Well, essentially what happened was a couple of months ago now on Fab Live, which is the official Gerry Anderson Facebook Anderson broadcast done by Richard James and Jamie Anderson. They mentioned a guy called Peter Littman, who is a teacher in England, and Jamie had messages from Peter in the past, just letting everyone know that as a sort of way of expressing himself as a fan, he would share Gerry Anderson episodes with various pupils in his class. So he would put on episodes and clips for his pupils, and then they would come up with assignments based around the subjects that were being taught. So yeah, You'd have poetry, creative writing, and that sort of thing. And this got mentioned on Fab Live a few times, and we just decided, hey, why not interview Peter? Let's see what he has to say, get a bit more information on this, because it all sounds really interesting. Yeah. So that's how the whole thing started.
It's a really, really interesting interview. I think it's fair to say that I certainly wish I'd had a teacher like that when I was in school, just kind of exploring different aspects of Gerry Anderson shows, you know, as a kind of good... yeah, inspiration for creative writing and stuff like that. I think that's a really great idea, because all the different, the stories and the imaginative potential of Gerry Anderson shows is just enormous. So to use that as a kind of tool to inspire kids and, you know, get them interested in the shows, I think absolutely great idea.
Yeah, and pretty much, as you say, pretty much limitless as well. So plenty of scope for different things there. And for anybody who wishes to read the interview, it's on the official Gerry Anderson website. That's www.gerryanderson.co.uk.
Yeah.
Just should be the first article on there at present. Teaching inspired by Gerry Anderson. So give that a read. Very interesting article, and we'll be discussing little bits and pieces as we go on.
It got me to thinking... you know, as a kid, I suppose I certainly wrote a lot of Thunderbird stories and things like that. I mean, still do now, but I was wondering if you could remember anything specific that you might have written as a kid about Thunderbirds, because I'm sure you did.
I'm pretty sure I did. In fact, I will go and find this at some point now that you've mentioned it. I've definitely drawn several pictures of the Thunderbird's craft in my primary school storybook, so obviously I'd written a story about them at some point and got a well done for it, so we'll be seeing pictures of that at some point. I'm trying to think if I wrote anything specific. I mean, obviously recently being involved with various things, you know, I've written, I wouldn't call them stories, but certainly, you know, little bits and pieces, fleshing out backgrounds. I guess I wrote a sort of a script for a potential Thunderbirds film, maybe, gosh, about 6 or 7 years ago now. It was probably, it makes the classic mistake that all very amateurish fan fiction makes, in that it tries to be far too ambitious and doesn't take the source material into account. It was essentially about a top secret World Navy submarine that got hijacked by the Zombites. And hilarity ensued and stuff happened, but at the end of the day, it was like a spy movie that happened to feature International Rescue, right. And reading over it, it sort of makes me cringe quite a bit. So yeah, I won't be doing that again. What about you?
Gosh. You see, I remember writing... Oh, no, not writing. So I remember seeing Thunderbirds 2086, actually. And I remember I'd spend a lot of time in school thinking about, there are alternative forms of Thunderbirds out there, because that's essentially what Thunderbirds 2086 is it takes the very, very basic version of the format and does completely different things with it, different vehicles, different characters, everything else. So I would do that. I would come up with ideas about, what if International Rescue was based in a jungle and all their Thunderbirds craft would be essentially giant metallic versions of different animals.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. I remember designing the base. I was really into kind of Graham Bleethman cross sections at the time, so I would draw all of the, draw the base and draw the vehicles and how they all worked and everything. And again, it was kind of loosely based on, Thunderbirds, but just with a slight twist on it. That was really good fun to do. I think I did another one set in a castle. Again, along very similar lines, one in a pyramid. I think that's it. But yeah, just crazy little stories every so often. And of course, while I was in school at the time, I was also starting exploring making my own little films and stuff. I did little cartoon animation things, very rough indeed, but of different Gerry Anderson shows. And it was just, fun to just do that kind of thing and be creative. And, definitely fun to do. Yeah.
Well, it certainly does stimulate the creativity there. I can't help wondering, though, the one set in the castle, did they have medieval-style dialogue? I can imagine somebody running forth with a piece of parchment and saying, "Forsooth, the hood hath created a disaster."
It was like a spooky castle kind of way. So if you imagine it more as like a Thunderbirds mixed with Halloween.
I get you.
Like, I think Thunderbird 1 was a giant bat or something. It was kind of weird. Kind of weird ideas.
Did somebody put something in your cereal?
I think they might have done. I was an inventive young thing.
Well, that's one way of putting it. Yeah. Let's just call it inventive and be kind that way.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I come up with all these stories and I just remember teachers would go, "Gosh, that's very inventive. Did you come up with all of this yourself?" Say, "Oh, yeah." And I actually remember, one teacher getting a little bit cross with me. Perhaps would be
really?
Wrong, but perhaps be too strong a word. Because we had to write about a holiday we'd been on, typical kind of story. I just said I went to Tracy Island and had a holiday. So it was completely fictitious, obviously, but it was
Could they prove it was fictitious? What proof did they have?
Probably by the fact that Tracy Island is fictional. I think that's probably what gave it away. But yeah.
But it's just an island in the South Pacific. They don't know if it's really there or not.
I think it was possibly the moving pool and folding palm trees and all the rest of it that might have given it away. I can't remember the specific details of this pretend holiday that I went on, but I just remember writing about it in school and the teacher being like, "Come on now, you need to write about an actual holiday you went on." I'm like, "That's boring."
Yeah, because real life is obviously so much more interesting than fiction.
Yeah, exactly. So, definitely credit to Peter for, telling his kids, "Hey, write about Gerry Anderson stuff. Don't be so grounded in reality," I guess.
Well, yeah, let's talk a bit more about that, because Peter and I have been emailing quite a lot just to get the information together for the article. Thankfully, we managed to get most of the information in there, and that was nice. I wanted to keep as much as possible because, it's a very lovely story, and and the fact that so many of these kids have been inspired by, you know, the worlds of Gerry Anderson is just such an amazing thing. One of the things that I wasn't really able to put in the article, just because of the nature of the article itself and the way it's formatted and put up, was some of the kids actually came from quite, you know, difficult backgrounds. Right. You know, sort of things weren't going terribly well for them. We'll not go into too much detail about it, but we'll just say that very difficult circumstances. And, you know, seeing these programs give them hope in a very real sense that, you know, people can go out and make these sort of programs, you know, the world, parts of the world, you know, there is hope out there. And I thought that was really nice.
It's great because obviously the shows are, pure escapism. There's nothing that real about them. So I suppose it's nice in a way that it was able to do that and, you know, just allow kids to just have fun at the end of the day and not have to worry about anything. So that's really nice. That's great to hear. Yeah. It's a shame that didn't make it into the article, but that's interesting to hear.
And I think it was more along the lines of I wasn't quite sure how to put it into the article in a sort of a readable context.
One of the kind of interesting stories in there is that one of the kids that he taught ended up going out and buying a Fireball XL5 box set at the end,
which is really interesting because you can sort of understand how kids today would love Thunderbirds the way we did when we were, you know, when we were first introduced to it. But for myself, at least, I know you quite like Fireball XL5, but I've always found it probably one of the weaker of the shows, possibly because I came into it so late, possibly because it wasn't really what I was expecting it to be.
Right.
It's a very interesting series, very way out for
it is pretty way out, time. Yeah, I mean, in terms of, it's fairly limitless in terms of what you can do with the plot. So, and I guess, for me at least, it kind of, I don't know, Supercar is very kind of comfortable in what it does, you know. It's not too ambitious, and then you've got Stingray, which had the benefit of a lot more money being behind it and everything else. So then Fireball XL5 unfortunately kind of comes in between that of trying to be very, very ambitious and just not quite having the facilities to do that. But I mean, it's great that you know, a kid was able to come along and go, well, I think it's great, I still think it's great, and you know, went out and decided to go and buy the whole series after seeing it in one of Peter's classes. I think that's fantastic.
And more fascinating still was that Peter showed them both the original opening sequence in monochrome and also the colorized version. And the kids said that the monochrome one actually looked better.
Really?
So, that's surprised me. But then, of course, I would take it for granted that kids today would prefer just seeing stuff in color and think black and white is dull.
Yeah, you see, that's what I've experienced. It's never how I never felt that way as a kid. And maybe kids don't think like that in general. But I think, you know, certainly I would expect them to prefer seeing things in color.
I think my first experience with a black and white series would have been a VHS tape of The Saint, the first season of The Saint that my uncle lent me when I was younger. Oh. And within about the first 5 minutes, you kind of just don't even notice that it's in black and white.
Yeah, of course.
Because you just get sucked in by the story the same way as anything else.
Yeah, I can't even think of what the first thing I ever saw in black and white was. I'm going to guess it was probably an old Doctor Who. That would be my guess.
Now that you mention it, actually, that may have been mine as well, because I did see the Dalek Invasion of Earth quite early on, so it may have been that.
Yeah.
But certainly for any long-running series with the same actor in the lead role, it probably would have been something like The Saint.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's something that we, you know, both of us grew up with and perfectly comfortable with, and it's kind of good to know that kids can deal with it, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of course. So, just to kind of go off on another tangent, so say if you were in Peter's shoes, and you had an opportunity to give an education on you know, the worlds of Gerry Anderson, what would you kind of teach them? What episodes would you show? What would you tell them about it? It's kind of a big question, I suppose.
It's a very big question. It's a huge question. I guess it would depend, first of all, what subject I was there to teach. Peter teaches a variety of subjects. Let's keep it sort of a bit more simplified for the purposes of the question. I'd love to be a music teacher.
Really?
I'd love to be able to do that sort of thing. You know, I am minimal talent with music. Yeah. You know, I can pick out a tune, I can do this and that, but I'm basically tone deaf when it comes to singing. I can barely play any instrument.
Right.
And I'd love to be able to say to someone, "Oh yeah, you've never heard of this guy called Barry Gray? Yeah, he was a composer in the 60s and 70s. Just have a listen to this."
That's true. Yeah.
And then just watch their faces just go
But I mean, yeah, obviously the fantastic thing about Barry Gray is the music is always fitted to the series and is always, you know, bang on in terms of what it needs to do. So I think it's a great lesson in just the sheer variety of stuff that one composer can come up with.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
and certainly if you were to give them an example of a scene without the music,
yeah,
and then play the same scene with the music on it and say, this is the difference, that music that has been written correctly and produced correctly, that's the difference it can make.
Yeah.
And then teach them the theory behind that and so forth. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, if I was to think of anything specific, I would kind of teach as a sort of, I don't know, introduction. First of all, I'd sort of have to think about, well, which, if I was to pick a Thunderbirds episode to say, this is an introduction, this is what Thunderbirds is like, you know, here's something you can learn about it. Obviously, the kind of first episode you would sort of think of picking out is Trapped in the Sky. It's not actually necessarily the best kind of example of showing what all of Thunderbirds is like, but I think it kind of it definitely shows all the best elements and would give a pretty good idea, and also kind of just kind of gauge a classroom full of kids' feeling towards it.
It's a good litmus test episode, yeah, definitely.
Definitely, you know, if they can put up with the kind of both, obviously, all the action and excitement and adventure, and then also the part of the plot where it does sag a little bit in the middle with all the filler material that was added, you know, if they can sit through 50 minutes of, you know, of Thunderbirds, then, yeah, if they can get through Trapped in the Sky, then, yeah, you should have them hooked.
Yeah, and if you wanted to make really sure that you could get them hooked, you should make them watch Pit of Peril.
Yeah, God, yes. If they can make it through Pit of Peril, then... Not that Pit of Peril's absolutely terrible or anything, but, you know, it definitely sags because the same filler material is reused over and over and over again.
I suppose the other thing that would be great to do would be to pull various allegories from different series. So the war allegory from Captain Scarlet, the many science allegories from Thunderbirds. You know, would it be possible to send a probe to the sun? Well, we now know that hopefully that is going to happen, because we've got the Parker probe going to the sun. Parker probe, of course. Sharing a coincidental name with the Thunderbirds character, wasn't actually named after that Parker at all, but rather a scientist that was associated with research into the sun.
Sure.
Other things, of course, you know, we could have...
there's no end of allegorical teachings and lessons in Space 1999.
Of course. Well, some of them are pretty blatant about it.
Yeah,
which is one of the nice things about Space 1999. They get a nice shiny allegory and they fire some sci-fi at it, which is basically exactly what the original series of Star Trek had done so successfully as well.
Yeah, yeah. I was also thinking that good lesson on fire safety can be and gambling addictions can be gotten from the Duchess assignment.
Yes. So remember, kids, you know, if you're trapped in a basement with a gas leak, don't knock an electrical box into a gas pipe because it will explode.
Exactly. And just don't go into a casino if you have a gambling problem, basically.
Yeah, that's also a good one. And if you must gamble away your entire fortune, remember to store a priceless painting inside your umbrella because that is the safest place in the world.
Yeah, so there are lessons to be learned there, absolutely. So yeah, there we go. Let us know, actually, if you have any kind of other thoughts. What would you teach from the world? Say you were a lecturer in Gerry Anderson Studies. What would you lecture? What would be your lecture series? Let us know. So thank you very much for listening. It's been another great show. Thank you for joining me, Andrew.
You're very welcome, Jack. Thanks for inviting me back again.
Absolutely. And we will talk to you very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Take care, everyone.